Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisab. We're back in the Grey Lodge, Season 1, Episode 6 of Twin Peaks, Realization Time. And we're getting close to the end of Season 1 already. Things are heating up. And today, what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about the significance of Audrey being 18. We're going to talk about Laura's sexuality. We're going to talk about prostitution. We'll start talking a little bit of timeline of the Twin Peaks universe. We've got a classic Agent Dale Cooper quote to go over today. We're going to get into, I've got a possibly a shocking revelation. There's a lot of people that get into Twin Peaks stuff. There's things that I'm might be revealing that have been already put out there. I don't know. I feel like I've got another golden gem here that I don't think anyone's hit before. I think I found something new. So if you're a Twin Peaks geek, that's pretty significant. And it's a pretty significant finding, I think. But we're going to go over it. And what else do we got? Oh, I've got another example of Hank's Domino, the number 6 of mysticism. We're going to talk about that. So without further ado, let's get into this Season 1, Episode 6, a.k.a. Episode 7, directed by Caleb Deschanel. Now, if that name sounds familiar, well, it's because there's a famous actress named Zoe Deschanel. And as it turns out, Caleb is Zoe's father. Fun facts galore. Caleb was raised in PA. He was a Quaker, joining such famous Quakers as William Penn, the guy who founded PA, Richard Nixon, Bonnie Raitt, who I infamously screwed up. What episode was I doing? I said Bonnie Raitt, and I meant Reba McEntire, and people got real upset. And I just said, hey, it might as well be the same person to me. I have no idea. And actor James Dean. That's right. James Dean was raised a Quaker before he was on the Quaker Oats packaging. No, just kidding. Of course, that's not him. And another fun fact, Zoe Deschanel was in the Offspring video, She's Got Issues. She's got issues and I'm going to pay. And it's written by Harley Payton. I don't know anything fun about Harley. No offense. Okay, so the episode starts out, much like the last episode, it starts out with a shot of the moon. You'll find this motif constantly in Twin Peaks where they're looking at the moon, all right? You got the astrological alignment vibe. You've got that eclipse vibe. You've got that change of mankind feeling there. Only this time, instead of it being blood red, it's a half moon. And we go into Cooper's room at the Great Northern, where he's explaining to Audrey, who I thought maybe they're comparing Audrey to the moon goddess, which would be Diane, which is a different character in Twin Peaks. But he's explaining to Audrey, he's like, look, you're in high school, I'm an FBI special agent, and I like you, but we can't make sexy time. And recall in the last episode, we talked about how they went to not great lengths, but they specifically cited and made sure the audience knows Audrey's 18. So in the eyes of the law, it's legal, right? But Cooper and you know, at the end of the last episode, Audrey was in bed naked. They're about to do things. Cooper comes in but he stops it. He puts the kibosh on it and he's like, look, I think you're beautiful. I think you're intelligible. I think you're desirable. But the FBI holds him to a higher standard and they have to be just friends. And I think the point they're trying to send home here is that Cooper, he's a very special kind of man. Like I said before, he's the Sigma male, a different kind of alpha male. He's in control of his emotions and behavior and he always tries to do the right thing. And he does it. Not only does he make the right decision to not sleep with this young lady, but he lets her down in a very gentle, loving way to make sure she didn't feel embarrassed or ashamed. He says, look, I'm going to go get some milkshakes or whatever, and we're going to sit here and we're just going to be friends. We're going to talk. And she's like, oh, that's cool. I mean, does a man like Agent Cooper exist on this planet? My God. Maybe only in TV, right? But recall, okay, I teased you last episode. I said they made a big deal of citing how Audrey was 18. And I think it was their subtle way of telling us, look, this Special Agent Cooper guy, he could very easily make sexy time with this beautiful young lady. And while very inappropriate, legal. He could have done it. Yet he still chose the higher road. And it speaks volumes of his character. You could even argue once we get to the end of the entire Twin Peaks saga, it speaks to a higher purpose. On the spiritual level. On the cosmic warfare between good and evil. He's the hero. He's the hero we need. The self-sacrificing hero. Because I tell you what, not an easy choice for our protagonist. So we're back on the case. Law enforcement, they've got the who, they've got the where, they need the why. Okay? They already know some of these players involved. They don't know why Laura Palmer was killed yet. They know Laura Palmer and Ronette Pulaski, they were with Leo Johnson and Jacques Renault and Waldo the Bird. And they found out that Jacques works at One Eye Jack's. They found out that there's plastic in Laura's stomach and it's part of a poker chip from One Eye Jack's. And we know Leo Johnson survived Shelley's gunshot. And at this point he's spying on Bobby. Now he's starting to figure out what's going on. And he sees Bobby showing up at his house. Now he knows Shelley is seeing Bobby behind his back. Then we go back to the cassette tape that Maddie and Donna and James found at Dr. Jacoby's apartment. All right. And what we have is a bit of therapy via cassette tape. Laura Palmer was recording her thoughts and ideas for Dr. Jacoby to hear. Okay. And I'm going to play that for you and pay attention because there's definitely some very sexual elements in this. Take a listen.
What's up, Doc? Just a few words before I go to sleep. I feel like I'm going to dream tonight. Big bad ones, you know? The kind you like. Easier talking into the recorder. I guess I feel I can say anything. All my secrets. The naked ones. I know you like those, Doc. I know you like me too. That'll be my little secret, okay? Just like your coconut. Why is it so easy to make men like me? And I don't even have to try very hard. Maybe if it was harder.
Laura's talking about having big bad dreams. She says the ones you like. And questions why is it so easy for her to make men like her? Because remember, Donna and the crew there, they think Jacoby has a missing tape and maybe he killed Laura. So they hear all this and they think, oh, something improper was going on here. And they hatch a plan to dupe Dr. Jacoby into thinking that Madeline is actually Laura Palmer, okay? Because remember, Madeline is Laura's cousin. But it's really interesting when you hear this, especially when we go over the Secret Diary of Laura Palmer book, because Laura really did have a thing for making men do whatever she wanted. She had a special, I don't know if superpower is the right word, but and we'll go over that. Plus, you see it make itself more present in the story when you watch Fire Walk With Me. So Audrey, she's of course on the case still. She is now working at Horn's department store. She's working the perfume counter. An interesting part of the show, you can see there's an Invitation to Love perfume on the counter available to buy, which is of course the little mini soap opera. And Audrey, she spies on Emery Battis. Remember, Emery's the one that, he's sort of the handler. And she sees Emery giving a young woman named Jenny a unicorn. And when he gives it to her, he says, "This is an ancient symbol of purity," which is going to be creepy on many levels. Because you find out that this unicorn, this symbol of purity, is given to her because Emery is sending women over to One-Eyed Jack's to become prostitutes. And in fact, unicorns do symbolize purity and innocence. It was believed that unicorns were pure, so much so that they had healing powers, which ties us into some of the theories about Eyes Wide Shut, right? We talked about how I bought an old book that Stanley Kubrick was using to research for the film, and he had underlined passages about shunamitism, which is the idea of using, you know, quote-unquote pure virgins to gain life and vitality. So we hear Emery Battis grooming Jenny. He's gassing her up about how much they liked her when she went up to One-Eyed Jack's before, and how if she plays her cards right, she could be a hospitality girl and she can escort the VIPs. And he says that what that means is you'll be attending to wealthy men in need of a little company. Now, this all sounds uncomfortably similar to the workings of Jeffrey Epstein, grooming young women to become sex workers for wealthy men. He tells Jenny, after he gives her the unicorn, he says, "Here's a business card, call a woman named Black Rose." And after Emery leaves his office, and Jenny leaves the office, Audrey looks through his little black book and finds the names of all the girls that he's presumably already sent up to One-Eyed Jack. One-Eyed Jack's. Ugh. And she finds Ronette, you know, Ronette Pulaski. And something you got to know if you're trying to sleuth through this show, the black book has Ronette and has the date of February 3rd, 1990. And that is actually a continuity error, because in the storyline, we're only in 1989. Because on February 5th of 89, Laura gives James the broken heart necklace. On February 17th, 1989, Laura has, and this is something you'll see in Fire Walk With Me, she has a dream about the Red Room, a.k.a. the waiting room. And she's visited by someone, I'm not going to say who tells her to make an entry in her diary. Okay. And you start to see some timeline slippage stuff happening in the storyline. Put it in the back pocket. I hope you're wearing big baggy Jenko jeans and you're putting all this in your back pockets, because there's a lot to put in there. And then February 23rd, 1989, Laura is murdered. So, of course, February 3rd, 1990 is in the future. Or is that part of the plot line? I don't know. I don't know yet. I'm putting that in my back pocket, maybe. Next, we're moving on. We get another classic Dale Cooper quote. I'm going to play it for you. Take a listen.
Would you like some coffee?
Afternoon, Shelley, yes.
Well, we should be on our way.
Harry, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Every day, once a day, give yourself a present. Don't plan it. Don't wait for it. Just let it happen. It could be a new shirt at the men's store, a catnap in your office chair, or two cups of good, hot, black coffee. Like this. A present.
Like Christmas.
Every day, give yourself a present. This is about self-love, okay? And the Buddha, Siddhartha Buddha, is credited with this quote. I'm going to read you. "You yourself, as much as anybody in the entire universe, deserve your love and affection." And I actually like that, you know? And note he's not saying, note that Cooper is not saying give yourself a gift every day. He's not saying be narcissistic. Because he does say just once a day, every day. Just once a day. Not all day, every day, once a day. But the Buddha is saying that, you know, self-love is important. And it's true. It's true. We talked about this over many episodes of the podcast. With, I had a podcast called Inside the Mind of a Conspiracy Theorist on Rockfin, if you recall. And we did an episode about hugging and the book called The Art of Hugging. Anyway, important concept. And of course, one of the greatest quotes from Dale Cooper. So Audrey lies to Jenny. And she says, hey, you know what? I'm supposed to go up to work at One Eye Jack's too. And she, and because she wants to get the phone number for Black Rose, because she didn't get the business card. She says, hey, I lost the card. And she actually took Jenny's unicorn that Jenny left behind to sell the lie to Jenny so that Jenny gives her the phone number to Black Rose. All right. Meanwhile, Norma is eating bonbons. She's watching Invitation to Love. She's sad because she feels like her drape runner dream is over. The patent office rejected her. She had all these big dreams. And it's really tragic. It's really sad. You kind of feel bad for Norma right now. And then Big Ed, he's another great dude, you know? He feels bad for her, too. He says, I mean, even though he's having an affair, he cares about this woman, right? Otherwise, he would have just left her a while ago. And you learn more about his storyline in The Secret History of Twin Peaks. But he consoles her. He's like, look, don't give up on your dreams yet. Josie, she tells Truman that old boring Josie, she tells Truman that Ben Horn is trying to burn down the sawmill. But Cooper, he's questioning Josie. He's like, is she playing tricks here? Is she playing Truman? He's starting to wonder, okay? Then, meanwhile, Catherine Packard, excuse me, she gets approached to sign a life insurance list with Josie listed as the beneficiary and set up by Ben Horn. And she's thinking, what is this? I didn't sign up for none of this. And even the attorney that's presenting her with the paper, he's kind of giving her a subtle wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, hey, did you even know this was happening? Or is this some shady business? So she negotiates a delay to signing. Now she knows something's up. And she looks and she finds that her cooked ledger is missing, all right? Meanwhile, at the sheriff's department, they've got the minor bird, Waldo, the one that was at the crime scene, I don't know if the crime scene is the right term, that was present when Laura was murdered. They're waiting for, because the minor bird can talk, and they think, well, maybe the minor bird will tell us what happened. So they're recording audio, okay? But Leo gets wind of this on the police scanner, and he decides he's going to silence the witness. So he shoots Waldo, the bird. And another tragedy on top of a tragedy, Waldo's blood and guts get sprayed all over the donuts all over the table. My goodness. Now, here's something we're going to take a deep assessment here, a deep cut on this, because they hear the gunshot, they go in there, they see Waldo's dead. Cooper reviews the audio recordings to see if anything was captured, okay? Now, I'm going to play it for you, the clip of what he's hearing on the little audio recorder. And listen, because right before Leo shoots Waldo, you hear the bird saying, Laura, Laura. Okay, take a listen. Okay, then after Leo kills Watto and Cooper's reviewing the audio and he's listening to previous recording, I swear you can hear from the pilot episode, Sarah Palmer, she's looking for her daughter, Laura. Remember this in the pilot? And she's like, Laura, Laura, right? She says that, which is kind of like what we just heard already. But I think you hear it again in a weird sort of garbled, distorted way. I think you hear, Laura, which sounds crazy. But take a listen to this other clip from the same recording. If you listen to the audio around the time that bird says, stop it, you can hear that garbled, Laura. That's what I think it is. It's my interpretation. And this is the big finding that I think I can add to the Twin Peaks investigation for the world here. It sounds to me like Sarah Palmer coming through on the tapes some mysterious way. I'm going to play it one more time for you. Take a listen. Tell me if you don't hear this garbled Laura. I mean, you could argue either way. It's possible that I'm way off on that, but it sounds like something to me, maybe. Moving on. Truman, Cooper, Big Ed, they're going to go undercover. They're going to go up to One-Eyed Jack's to take a look for themselves what's going on up there. And they meet the Madame Blackie. She's apparently Black Rose. And they're kind of dressed in disguise. Big Ed's just wearing a bigger wig and a mustache. And he even starts to tell Blackie that he owns a gas station, but he stops himself short and says he's an oral surgeon. So they're going to start playing. They got $10,000 of FBI money, and they're going to play some gambling games, right? Because they're doing a little research, trying to do a little recon. And Cooper gives Big Ed $300 of the $10,000. Because Cooper's great at gambling. Of course he's great at gambling. And he's going to win 10%. So the FBI gives him 10 G's. Meanwhile, at the Great Northern, Ben and Jerry are eating ice cream, of all things. And Jerry is seen holding a massive pine cone. All right, I'll put the image on the Instagram, of course, as always. The pine cone is something that we talked about when I did a film analysis of Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. The pine cone is symbolism of the pineal gland, the all-seeing eye, which holds great value to the occultist. The opening of the all-seeing eye. And behind Ben's desk, you can see this Native American-inspired artwork, and one of the faces has, obviously, two eyeballs, but the eyeballs look like Saturn with a ring around it, which ties us into the Red Room, the waiting room, which has the Saturnian little, I don't know what you call it, statue thing next to Cooper. And Saturn and the role of time is a big element of this story of Twin Peaks. Then, listen to what Jerry says. I'm going to play a clip for you. He talks about how the Icelanders that they're trying to court to buy in on this project, how inspired they were by trees, so much so that they were worshiping them. Take a listen.
So Jerry, maybe you'd like to take some of our guests down to the dining room.
Sounds near it. I'll be with you in half a tick. You should have seen them at this tour of the site. The trees, man.
Jerry.
They worship them.
Jerry.
I caught a couple of them hugging pine.
Jerry.
No kidding.
When are they signing the contracts?
Now, the book Secret History of Twin Peaks talks a little bit more about the Ghostwood National Forest and that whole region of Twin Peaks being a place of paranormal activity or nature worship even. And we're going to cover that later, of course. The ancient cultures, they practice a lot of nature worship. You see it oftentimes in the pagan religions. So could it be a nod to that? Quite possibly. And I want to know what trees. Was it the firs? Was it the sycamores? We don't know yet. We don't know. Meanwhile, Audrey gets, she gets into One-Eyed Jack's, as she planned on doing. And she gets into Blackie's office, trying to get a job as a working girl there. And Blackie is calling her out. She's like, you don't have any experience doing this. So what are you doing here? And Audrey, she picks a cherry, puts it in her mouth, and twists the cherry stem in a knot. You know, this is an old trope from the movies. The implication is that she is very good with her tongue. All right. So she immediately is hired. Well, you'll notice now in Blackie's office, though, her room is full of red curtains. And we talked about that, I believe, on the last episode, the importance of the red curtain as the entrance to the new realm, as per David Lynch. It's why it's in the waiting room. All those things, right? Just like in Cooper's dreams and at the cabin, you see the recurring motif that we're sort of playing with something that's not of this world. Also, if you look, and I'll put this image on the Instagram too, of course, there appears to be a pine cone on her desk, like a decoration statue looking thing, paperweight, I don't know, of a pine cone, again. Many times they're telling us this messaging of the pineal gland. So Cooper, he's playing blackjack. They're doing the recon, and there's Jacques Renault. That's the man they want to talk to, right? He's the dealer. But what you'll notice, he's wearing a bolo tie, and that bolo tie shows us one pair of dice, and they've got the threes, just like Hank's domino, the two threes, which, as we already talked about, the actor who played Hank said six is the number of the mystical. I think I got that right. Three is the number of magic is what he said, which is a little confusing because Crowley said 11 was the number of magic. Either way, there's the threes from Hank's domino on Jacques' bolo tie. Finally, the episode ends. Maddie is, of course, trying to convince Dr. Jacoby she's Laura by wearing a blonde wig. But the real thing she's doing is distracting Dr. Jacoby so that James and Donna can break into the office and find this lost cassette tape that they think holds some kind of clue because they think Dr. Jacoby might have killed Laura. Maddie tells Dr. Jacoby, meet me at Sparkwood in 21. So Jacoby takes the bait. He leaves his apartment. James and Donna go in there and they're going to search his place. Meanwhile, Bobby plants a bag of drugs into James's motorcycle gas tank. A strange place to plant the drugs, but hey, whatever. And that's it. That's the end of the episode. Oh, and one more thing. The Sparkwood in 21 is significant because that is where, and I don't know if we know this yet, but that is where Laura Palmer got off. That was where she was last seen. Laura Palmer gets off James's bike at Sparkwood in 21 and runs into the woods. And that's the last time she was seen. So it's an important intersection. And it's interesting they chose that of all the places they could choose in Twin Peaks. That's where they said to meet. So that's it. That's the end of Season 1, Episode 6. Your homework for next week. The season finale, Season 1, Episode 7, a.k.a. Episode 8. The Last Evening. And Of course, we're going to go out with a bang. And that last one's going to, it's directed and written by Mark Frost, so you know it's going to be good, right? So get ready for that. Till next time, stay woke.